This episode of Voices of the Elephant is sponsored by DayCamp for Developers. Listen for a special offer at the end of this podcast. Welcome to the Voices of the Elephant podcast. Each episode of Voices of the Elephant brings you an interview with a member of the PHP community. From project leaders to user group organizers, we talk to the people that are helping make the PHP community special. Hi, welcome. Today we've got a special guest, Ed Finkler, and I've known Ed for probably 5-6 years now. Ed, I think we met at OzCon one year, and you left I was working the Zen booth, and you left the Zen booth, and I'm like, nice guy, but geez, the hair. So
I know, it's an embarrassment.
But you know, you've proven that even with the hair, man, you're an awesome guy. So you're just a little bit different. I want to ask you a couple questions today, if I can. I got 3 questions for you. The first one is, and we're going to talk about open source projects, since you've led a open source project and built a community around it, a very impressive project. So let me launch right in. You've been leading an OS project now, SPAS, an open source project now for a few years, and I know you have help. At what point did you realize you couldn't do it all yourself, and what was the first role that you created to get somebody involved?
I think for me, and I think a lot of people will find this, when did I first learn it? It's hard because I've been doing SPAS for 4 years, so I can barely remember last week. So nailing me down on an exact time is a little tough, but probably well within that first year, I started realizing that I needed help with support stuff. And when I say that, I mean like end user support. And it's a little different because, you know, SPAS is a product for or is an application for end users. It's not like a developer tool, like a library or something that people deal with. So the way that you interact with those folks and the way that, you know, you deal with end users and sort of the nature of that is a little bit different than you have with something that's really aimed at developers. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, it's probably harder. Because I think there's when you're dealing with another developer, a lot of times they understand exactly kind of what you're doing because you're sort of doing the same kinds of things. When you are working with end users, there's a much bigger disconnect between, you know, they don't know how the hot dogs or whatever, however, they don't know how the sausage gets made. They just eat it. You know what I mean? And, my metaphor was a little bad there, but the point is, you'll deal with some folks who, sometimes are, really intelligent on the ball, or just, you know, smart guy. Sometimes they'll be very technically savvy. Sometimes they're not at all. Sometimes the grammar is hard to get through. you know, and it just varies. You know, and it's not, you know, that can be tough. And I think that has only gotten bigger as I would say sort of microblogging and Twitter in particular have gotten bigger, and especially when I moved I got on WebOS and I started getting a lot more users on WebOS. It really opened up a lot of different users and the kinds of folks who I'd interact with are not technical users like at all. And that makes a big difference, and that's one of the clear areas where you really, I think, you find you need help when you're making a like that kind of an end user product. That was really the first thing. The second thing you find is that I think you know, I'm a developer and I have some skills, but I'm not trained in any way in terms of like UX and design work and stuff like that. I'm okay at it. I'm not great, but I'm okay. And that gets you, you know, I was able to sort of get to a certain point with that, but I found that the other sort of roles that we brought in have been UX stuff. And a lot of times it's hard to find people who are sort of passionate about it the way you are. And luckily I've sort of lucked out because I worked with a guy, Ronald DeVera, who he designed the what's kind of the really, I guess, the default theme in Spaz Desktop. It's called Leopaz, which is it's designed to be it mirrors the look of OS X. And he did just this amazing work on it. And I think it was his commitment to really doing a great job on it, and his abilities were just well beyond what I was able to do. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And when you find somebody who's talented and also really dedicated to something that you're working on, that's really rare, and it's really, really special. So when you find somebody like that, you really do whatever you can to encourage them. But really it was a matter of, you know, I think as you start getting more users, I think the first thing you really have is support issues, and you need more help with that. And with support, though, what I found is that it's really, you know, it's hard for people. It's not just support. It's all this stuff, too. It's hard for anybody to be as passionate about what you're doing as you are. If it's your sort of idea and it's your project, it's really hard for somebody else to feel the same way about it. And that's understandable. And I've been in other endeavors like doing self-publishing and stuff like that. If you're old enough to remember the 90s, pre-internet and fanzines and stuff like that, where people did those kinds of things. I was, you know, somewhat active in that when I was a teenager. And one of the things you find is that you try to get people to write for you and things like that, or do stuff, and sometimes it works, but most of the time you can't really expect it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so that's not necessarily bad. What it is that nobody's really ever going to be as passionate about your idea as you are. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's wise words too, because you're absolutely right. You come up with it, it's your baby, and you want to throw it out there and you want to build a community around it. But, you know, everybody else is like, you know, I got my own projects, or, you know, they're just not going to be as passionate as you are. And you're right. If you find a good designer you can work with, I mean, I married mine, so, you know, but you do what you want. So
you lucked out there, didn't you?
Oh, I mean, seriously.
I think that what that means is, you know, in the context of having sort of other roles and things like that is if you're not in a position to actually compensate people, what it means is that their interest, it's really driven based on their interests. Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm still doing this 4 years from now is because I really like doing it, you know, and I get a whole lot out of it. And a lot of what I get out of it is because it's something I'm doing and sort of I put together and stuff. And you know, people aren't going to feel really the same way about that. You know, they don't have the same kind of investment in it. So it doesn't drive them the same kind of way. And that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. That's sort of the nature of the beast. You know, I'm not as passionate about, you know, I don't know, project XYZ that maybe even I use a lot, like some, you know, I don't know, PHP framework or a JavaScript library or something like that. It doesn't mean things I've contributed to on the outside, like there's a JavaScript library to sort of do a really simple key value or key document store called LawnShare. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like a really lightweight CouchDB, I guess you might describe it as, right? And it can work in browsers and in other JavaScript environments and stuff like that. Well, I contributed a couple things to that. But although I've had other ideas about it, I've never been passionate enough to say, oh, you know what, I'm actually going to sit down and implement these ideas and do dirt, 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 dirt.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just because it's not, you know, it's – it's about what your motivation is. And a lot of times your motivation comes from sort of that investment of, you know, maybe it's pride, you know, maybe it's something like that. And so, so what you kind of have is that, especially since I've been doing, you know, Spaz is I think good just about 4 years old now. People kind of drift in and out, and it's, you know, I try to kind of keep in touch with everybody, but it's definitely, you'll see, you know, somebody will be kind of productive and contribute some stuff over the course of a couple of weeks, and then they might not ever really contribute anything again. And, or they might, you know, some folks have, you know, did stuff for several months or a year. A guy Kibitzer on Twitter, who was in Australia, really helped me out a long time with support. And he did a lot with that. And then eventually, I think it was about a year, he basically said, I can't do this anymore. Because it was just driving him nuts, dealing with people. And I totally respect that. You know, he put in a huge amount of time into a project that wasn't his, and it was really cool of him to do that. And, that was, you know, that was pretty awesome. But it's definitely the case that, you know, when you have a project like this and there isn't, you know, I've sort of actively avoided, you know, monetizing it. And that means that it's always probably going to be, you know, there's not going to be stuff sort of nailed down like, okay, there's these clear roles and these people occupy these roles and stuff like that. It's really how, if people want to invest, that's great. Sometimes it's frustrating if you sort of don't have a good perspective on it. Sometimes you're kind of like, you know, please help me. And you know, nobody helps. And you're like, what, you know, and it's frustrating, but. I think you need some perspective on it, like I said, about about what people are going to be willing to put into it, and that it's just, it's not their baby, and they're not going to feel the same way about it, and that's okay, you know.
Yeah, and as long as you have resolved that issue within yourself, that it is okay that they're not going to feel the same way, but they're going to contribute, they're going to scratch their own itch. You know, once if they move on and they don't contribute anymore, well, you're still the better for it. So,
oh yeah, it's awesome. And so that's just kind of the way it is. It's
cool.
Just
kind of... Well, I will have to say that, you know, following you on Twitter and hanging out with you on IRC, if you get frustrated at all with the end users of your product, you don't show it, dude. I mean, you're level. So.
Wow. Yeah. No, I have, like I tell people, I have no poker face whatsoever. and I am unfortunately don't always have the greatest ability to sort of like see perspective when I get emotional about stuff. And that can be a tough thing and sometimes an embarrassing thing. And sometimes, you know, a source of some conflict, but I at the very least, I try to always apologize for what I do. So.
I would not worry about it at all. You know me, I'm just picking on you.
Yeah, I know, man.
Let's move on to our second question. What ways do you use to communicate with your developer community? And of all the ways that you use, which one is the most effective that you've found? Now, we're talking developers and contributors, not your wide area people.
Right, right. So what I've found is that they're kind of similar in the sense of who I communicate with. Focusing on developers, it is, there are really, I guess I'd say, what I listed these things out. One of the interesting things I found was that for a while I was using mailing lists, and I was kind of a fan of mailing lists, and I tended to use mailing lists a lot from, because I'm old and remember when people actually emailed each other and stuff like that. And so I, you know, that was kind of a common thing for me. And when I was first doing Spaz, like the first couple of years, I'd say, I used mailing lists and actually had, you know, some activity on mailing lists. And I don't know exactly why it is. And maybe it was a matter of, it was just the group of people who was there sort of active on the mailing list kind of dropped out. And other people just weren't there in the same way or what. But I noticed after a while, like I said, maybe 2 years in, I would be post. It used to be I would post things on this mailing list I have, and people would actually respond or ask questions and stuff. And then after a while, it just stopped. People just weren't responding anymore to it or what have you. Now, I don't know whether or not that's indicative of a way that people are not using email in the same way anymore. I think there is something to that, but I don't, I don't know. I can't examine it beyond that. But what I particularly found was that for the folks I was interacting with, that email list sort of surprisingly ended up not working anymore for me.
That is surprising, because I assume that was going to be the big one. Well, what does work for you then?
Yeah. Okay. So there's a couple things. For doing announcement type stuff, using Twitter, and now I've been using Identica more, and as there's sort of been a little bit of a developer exodus in the past couple of weeks, off of Twitter, and some people exploring some other stuff, especially developer types, interaction, but on those mediums, I guess microblogging mediums, has been good, but it's limited in a certain way because you cannot have extended discussions about stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you can sort of announce things back and forth, and you can sort of answer things quickly, but you can't have an extended technical discussion or sort of pound things out the way that you expect. So what you can do is you can say, hey, we're going to have a hackathon this time, right? But you can't say, hey, let's talk about, our roadmap here on Twitter. You can't do that because it's just that medium doesn't really work for that. I would say that another way, and actually probably a bit of a more effective way of doing it, is if it's a particularly important topic and or I particularly feel less lazy that day, I will write a blog post about something. And what I'll do is I'll actually then go around and go to microblogging mediums like Twitter. In fact, Twitter and Identica are really the only ones that I would talk about. I don't use Facebook for this kind of stuff. I use Facebook to interact some with family and personal friends, usually real life friends, but I don't use it to interact with I don't know, developer friends or developer communities. So I don't use Facebook for that at all. So it's really, I guess, Twitter and Identica. I will announce and push sort of the blog stuff there. And I find that you oftentimes get a bigger push out of that because it's sort of, in terms of awareness of what you're talking about and how many people you reach. And I think part of that, it's a couple things. One, I kind of think it there's more of a permanence behind it. It's you're linking to something, but this blog post is sort of a big, anchor that's out there. And if I just make a little post on Twitter, that just, goes away very quickly. It's like a little piece of paper flies away. Mm-hmm. Well, the blog post is sort of has a more permanent nature to it. And it's sort of more weighty, I guess. And it seems like when I'm making more significant announcements, it would be more effective if I were planning some event like a hackathon or something like that. Really what I should do, and I haven't always done this for sure, what I should do is I should make a blog post about it and talk clearly about what we're going to do and stuff, and this is where the state of it and things like that. And then I've got that blog post out there, and then I announce that on through microblogging channels. Then that works really well, I think. That's probably the best way to do it, is to follow it up like that. But again, those things I'm talking about are sort of one way ish. You can't really have discussions with it. And so what I found is that not as many as you'd think, but a lot of developers are hip enough to IRC that I can get them on there. And mm-hmm. It's funny because I, for 7 or 8 years, I really rarely used IRC from 2000 to 2008 or something like that. And then I sort of viewed IRC as a very antiquated communication medium. And I'm, you know, and I guess it was, it's just your experience, you know what I mean? And it's kind of like, IRC people still use that? Really? What? I think I sort of got pulled back into it some when I started, there were, you know, some interacting with developer folks, especially in the page view community on IRC. And I, you know, and some of them are just, you know, friends of mine. Now I'm actually sort of, I participate less sort of in technical channels and more just in sort of like channels with friends. Or I also found that I'm doing a lot more when you're doing, if you're working remotely like I do now, you end up, like IRC is a good choice for that. It's not the only choice, but it's a good choice if everybody's at least savvy enough to it to use it. And so IRC, what I found is really a good way to have those more extended discussions.
Now you run your hackathons on IRC also, right?
Yeah, that's what I've done. And, you know, I was talking, you know, I talked about sort of whether people are sort of savvy to it or not. You know, there are definitely a lot of developers who aren't, and they're just not used to it. You know, they might. So I've had people suggest other sort of like multi-user chat mediums as possibilities, but I guess I still have felt like IRC was the best choice. It's not a perfect choice, and it has. It is not super easy to get in there. It's not really noob friendly in that sense. You know, it's not like there are things out there where you can just go to a web page and do it, but there's so many, it's so open ended. It's overwhelming in this stuff. And there's nomenclature and junk that you don't necessarily understand unless you hang out there for months and months, and then you sort of start to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I don't, there are definitely some people who might be participating who aren't because I'm on IRC, and because I do that stuff on IRC. But there's a couple ways, I guess, I look at that. The first thing is that I guess I say, well, it's my project. I can do whatever the hell I want to. And that's sort of true. the second thing I guess you'd say is that I think that if somebody's really motivated to do stuff, they will put some effort into doing that. And if I can tell somebody is motivated, I will usually try to say, you know, give them a little bit of hints like, hey, okay, you don't know how to get an IRC. Well, here's what OS are you on? Here's a client or a web-based thing or something you can use. This is how you get into it. And you know, you have to kind of be prepared to identify people who seem like good candidates for stuff, you know, who seem interested and like serious about doing stuff. And, you put a little time into try to helping those guys out. Or you might talk to them a little bit on IM, but then you say, hey, really, we meet over here on IRC. Have you been there before? If yes, you know, it's awesome. If not, okay, well, here's a couple links you can look into. I think that, so what I found is that for our group, I think IRC has worked pretty well. I think it's going to vary from project to project and sort of the nature of that community, you know, of people who are interested. And some people are going to be a little more savvy to certain things than others. But I think that sort of extended real-time chat is really effective, and it really helps you hack stuff out.
Cool.
Now, I guess I'd say, you know, some people will do things like they'll do Skype calls and stuff like that. I think so. I found that, you know, really effective, like working remotely, you know, in my day job stuff and things like that. And that might be something I would do if I had like a real sort of team who was together on stuff, but I just have never really had that with Spaz. So I don't know. It's maybe it's because I sort of try to take it a little less seriously. I don't know. And I kind of am like, no, I'm just going to talk to you through the keyboard, and I don't want to go to all the effort of getting on Skype, calling people and junk like that. But some people have found that really effective. I mean, if you talk to me about like how to work remotely, I think Skype or something like it is really, really important. And I have found that voice chat is really, really huge for doing remote working and doing. So I think it's really important to not just talk to everybody through IRC for, you know, a week on end. I really think it's important to talk to people on stuff, to tack stuff out. At least it really works for me. Some people may feel differently, but I think you get really disconnected if you don't do that. But again, with Spaz, I haven't really done that. It's a good thing to look at, I think, but it's just not something I've really done too much of.
Yeah, I don't see a lot of open source projects so much using Skype. At our last day camp for developers, which was all on telecommuting, I think 3 of the 5 speakers spoke about the fact that for small team work, Skype calls and things like that are almost invaluable. Avdi Grimm talked at length about it and gave some real great advice.
Right.
Okay, third question. Other than coding, what's the most fun part about running an open source project?
I'm not sure I'm going to give you the answer of which is the most fun. But it's not bad. It's just I'm not sure I call it the most fun. I would say the most rewarding stuff.
Okay, that works too. Most rewarding.
The coolest and most rewarding thing I think you see other than coding. And there's a lot of rewarding things, I should say. The reason why I do development and the kind of development that I do is because I really like to build stuff and then see it running. And it's a little – like for me, there's sort of this visual feedback that I get, and the fact that I built that and actually can see it doing something is a really cool thing for me. And I think that's why I like to build tools that are visually, that have some visual aspect. And so I think sort of application development has worked out well for me in that sense. And I think it's the reason why I do web development as opposed to, sort of guts level, OS coding or something like that. That stuff kind of interests me less. I'm sort of visually oriented that way. And so that's really rewarding. And it's really rewarding when you put something out there and people, and you do like a pretty, good job and people will say, wow, this is really cool. You'll just see people's feedback from that. That's really edifying. That's really rewarding and a huge ego boost when you put something out there and you see, people really liked it and that, you put that effort into it and you polished it and they thought it was really cool. And that's really neat. I think though, I mean, other than sort of building this stuff, I think one of the most rewarding things, probably the most rewarding thing after that is when you see somebody contributes to your project. And that, with Spaz, it's whether they would write even if it was just like, they wrote like some kind of piece, like a support article for it. Like, we have kind of a knowledge base that we use we use Tender app, which is a cool support product. It's kind of like Get Satisfaction, but without a bunch of crap all over the screen that makes it so you can't tell how to actually interact with it. So I really like Tender. And so we have a knowledge base up there. Even something like that, obviously somebody writes some code and gives and contributes this code, or somebody contributes some design work, graphics or a theme. The fact that, I mentioned before that Ron DeVera put all that time into making a really, really amazing theme for Spaz is – one of the most rewarding things you ever get is because something that you put out is really inspiring other people to create stuff. And that's really, really neat. That is just amazing and feels so good that you were able to, that you made something and that somebody felt like I said, I guess inspired enough to act on it, to say, hey, I want to do this kind of thing too. I want to contribute in some way to this too and keep this going. And that is really, really cool. It's kind of hard to articulate the feeling you get with it, but I guess that's it. It's just, you made something and somebody else looked at it and said, that's really cool. I want to add to that too. And sort of go through the same, that process of it motivated them enough to not just say, oh, that's cool, and use it. Or not use it or whatever, or make some kind of pithy comment about it or what have you, but actually put some time into it and sit down and give their time to do some, to create something that adds on to it. That's really amazing.
Cool.
In Spaz, that has been the coolest part, is when people do that.
I can imagine.
It's hard for me to understand what it must be like for somebody like Rasmus Lerdorf, who, although I'm sure some days may regret what he did, I think it must be incredibly inspiring for him to see something that he put together that has grown in such a way.
Yeah.
Or somebody like Guido von Rossum or that Japanese dude who made Ruby or what have you. That must be so cool. And, you know, I get a little sort of taste of that with Spaz. And it's, like I said, it's a little bit different because it's an end user kind of thing. And the nature of how people contribute or don't contribute, how much they do or not, it's just kind of different.
Yeah.
But it's really cool when to see that, because it's sort of like, this is going to sound really fruity, but it's sort of like you put something out there and inspired somebody else to put the same kind of thing out there too. The same kind of vibe. Mm-hmm. This is going to sound terrible. It's sort of like, you know, you did a good deed and it inspired somebody else to do a good deed too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I understand totally.
I guess that's sort of what you'd like it to be, you know. Maybe some people don't always think that Spaz was a good deed, but I mean, I think it's kind of like that. And that is, man, that's really cool. And I guess it's sort of like, hey, I wasn't just doing this in a vacuum. I actually sort of impacted other people's lives in a little way.
Yeah.
They appreciate it,
that's the good feeling you get, you know, other than the fact that you've got a microblogging client that you really love using, and you know, you get that out of it, but that feeling of they're using something I built and they appreciate it.
Yeah, so that is really, you know, I'm not sure I call it fun, but I think it's the most rewarding.
No, it is rewarding, and you're right. That was a much better choice of word.
Yeah. I mean, there's fun things. There's lots of fun things about it, and I think the fun stuff is the exciting and fun stuff is, it sort of tends to be around development stuff, and especially if you get other people involved in developing, that's really fun. But man, that idea that you sort of inspired other people to sort of do a little bit of the same thing you did.
Mm-hmm.
That's really awesome and really cool. And just it makes you that, like, in the end, it reminds you of why you do it. And that, I guess that's it. That's what's so cool about it.
Yeah. Ed, I want to thank you for your time today. I appreciate you being a guest here with us on Voices of the Elephant. And even though we didn't talk a lot about PHP tonight, you do contribute a lot to the PHP community at large. And I just want to say thank you for everything that you do for the PHP community.
Oh, well, I hope it all evens out, or at least is sort of a plus one. I thank you for saying that. I appreciate you having me on.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Voices of the Elephant. This podcast is copyright 2011 EICC Incorporated, and all rights are reserved. For more information on the podcast and to nominate someone to be interviewed, visit the website voicesoftheelephant.com. Elephant is, of course, spelled ELEPHPANT.
DayCamp for Developers is a one-day, technology-agnostic online training camp for web developers. We cover the topics that you won't find at any other conference at a price that every developer can afford. Visit our website today, daycamp4developers.com, and reserve your seat for the next class. As a listener of Voices of the Elephant, use the discount code VOTE to save $10 off your ticket. DayCamp for Developers. Invest a day in your career.